Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Personal Transformation. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto, or Old Etobicoke, as I always like to say. And tonight, I am so honored. I have two special ladies that we've had on here before. I have Maria and Sabra with me here tonight. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening, Stuart.
Hello, Stuart.
So tonight, we're going to be talking about self-care. And for those survivors of childhood sexual abuse out there, know exactly what I'm talking about. And self-care is one of the toughest things that we do to take care of ourselves, which we don't do to take care of ourselves, I should say. And I'm saying we're really going to talk about that. First off, I'm going to say right off the bat, I'm not here to tell you what to do because I am not a therapist, although we do have a therapist in our midst. Nevertheless, but I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. But I have a couple of announcements I'd like to get out of the way. And maybe you want me to read this, Maria? You want to read it?
Sure.
Okay, so first off, well, we have our 9th annual Transforming Trauma conference coming up in May the 31st. And we have quite a list of guests here this year. Rebecca Rosenblatt, if I registered therapist, if I pronounce your name correctly. Carol Burnett, artist and author. And of course, we have yours truly, the founder of the Gatehouse, Arthur Lockhart, will be speaking as well. And also, we have Sarah Champion. I'm not even pronouncing your last name correctly.
Sarah Shajuyan.
Thank you. And she's facilitator here at the Gatehouse as well. And I'm not too sure what she's going to be talking about.
Her story and also some of the work that she's doing with her organization, Lighting Up Dark Corners.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear it. We also have Carol Trasano.
Terrazio.
Sorry. Forgive me. I can't speak today. And what would Carol be speaking about? She's a master NLP practitioner.
Yes. So neuro-linguistic programming. And we're just going to highlight that, what it is, just the basics of it later on in the show.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then we have Jay and Caroline, which have been running the Partners Program for many years now. And I'm also part of that as well, which we'll be talking about. And I also have yours truly will be talking there as well. And what I will be talking about will be, well, obviously about personal transformation, but more so on the fact that the connection that I've made with everybody around the world, other survivors and other practitioners that are in this type of work and have made awesome connection. What I mean by around the world, well, I'll describe more about that a little later on. And not only in the show tonight as well, but when we're part of the conference and I'm talking about it as well. And also we have Nicola as well. For those who know her on Twitter, she is known as Living with Abuse. And she's also been on the show here a few times as well with me as well. She's also a facilitator here at the Gatehouse as well. She's also a yoga instructor and she's incorporated, I guess you call it trauma therapy into it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the best way to say it. And she's just started that off as well here at the Gatehouse, which is doing very well, I understand. But anyway, that is our line of guests that we have coming up at the Transforming Trauma Conference coming up for May 31st. And if you'd like to partake in this conference, obviously you can go onto our website and you can register there. Assuming the tickets are $150 a piece with a sliding scale, is that correct?
Yes.
And and if you'd like to do it on a more personal, you can call the Gatehouse at 416-255-5900 and speak with any one of our volunteers or students or staff, and we'll be more than happy to help. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Sabra and Maria here with me, and we're going to be talking about self-care. I guess we could just dive right into it. And, well, what does self-care mean to you? I guess let's start off with that. But what does self-care mean to you, Maria?
Well, I think self-care and feel that self-care is not, first of all, selfish. There's a lot of misconceptions around that. So I think it's one of the more important things that a survivor can do for themselves is to take care of their overall mental health, physical health, and overall well-being, and it is not a selfish action. And sometimes a lot of guilt and shame could surface for survivors. I know for myself, sometimes I feel like it's selfish, but knowing cognitively that it is not has helped me to engage in self-care for myself.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any thoughts on that too, Sabra?
Yes, I do have thoughts. However, Stuart, I'd like to begin by just sharing thoughts about, you know, the you know, Maria alluded to shame and expectations and myths. So I would like to start off by saying, as human beings, we are not meant to be perfect. Mm-hmm. We are meant to be whole. Having a wholesome life requires one to be aware, to be conscious, and that consciousness and awareness through reflection, which help one to actually develop a sense of commitment to self and accountability to self. And I wanted to start there because I think self-care is about commitment to self and accountability to self.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And it's so important too as well, because we kind of, I know for myself, I don't look at the so much the details of it, like the deeper details of it, just to try to do it. And that's hard enough as it is, but thank you for sharing that. So I noticed in your, Maria Carney did up a kind of like a, I guess you can call it like
an outline.
Yes. Of what we're going to be talking about. And I guess to start off with, how do we recognize when you're triggered? To begin with, how, you know, if you're going to do self-care, well, how do you know you need self-care?
How do you recognize when you're triggered is a great question, Stuart, because oftentimes what I hear, you know, from people that are coming through the house is that they know that they're triggered because they feel it in their body, but they don't reflect on how they're feeling about the trigger or what they're even thinking about what the trigger is or how it manifests in their lives, right? So some folks will talk about sleeping issues, but not necessarily do an assessment to look at their bedroom to see if there's something in that room that triggers them to the point where they don't feel safe and hence why they cannot sleep in their own bedroom. It could be a color, it could be an old toy, a book that was in the same room or a similar room, or even a bedspread that was the same, or just the size of the bed itself could be the trigger, right? So that people don't think about that. They know that they're triggered. Their body tells them that they are in this overwhelmed state and want to run out of the room, or that they toss and turn a lot of the night and they can't sleep, but they don't do the other side, which is like looking at what are the triggers that are surfacing and how do their thoughts about those triggers impact how they feel and hence why they can't sleep. That's the behavior is insomnia. It's not productive. They can't sleep in their own bedrooms.
Yeah, absolutely. So in other words, a trigger may also be called a trauma stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
It could be called a trauma stressor based on what Maria has just shared with us, a trauma reminder. So those are things to keep in mind, that a trigger is a psychological stimulus that prompts one, that kind of gets one to recall a previous traumatic experience. But the stimulus itself may not even be frightening, like mm-hmm. Maria talked about a toy or a book.
Mm-hmm.
That the book in itself is not frightening. The toy in itself is not frightening. But what it does, it evokes a traumatic experience, sometimes indirectly, sometimes superficially. And I think what it will be also important for listeners to remember and think about it, that triggers can be very subtle and difficult to anticipate, because some days you walk into the same room and there might be the same book there, mm-hmm. and it doesn't evoke any feeling or thinking. Mm-hmm. There could be that toy and it doesn't. But then somehow, on another day, it would trigger. Mm-hmm. Now, we gave examples of something very physical. We said a bedspread or a toy or a
book. What about a smell?
But it could be smell.
Mm-hmm.
It could be even sound that could trigger it.
Yeah, you know, and I can so relate to that, because I know myself for many, many years, I didn't realize what triggered me. And I only say this just for what we're talking about, is going into basements, for example. I never even realized it triggered me. It took me a long time to figure that out. And even going to water now, it took me a while to figure that out. When I got help at the gatehouse, that's when I was able to figure out, oh my God, that's where that's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And Stuart, on that point, you are connecting to what we started off by saying about awareness, consciousness, mm-hmm. reflectiveness. Mm-hmm. So you see how that is tied up, or how tied together, I should
tied
say.
Together. But when I did finally figure that out, it was like, oh, wow. I mean, every time I go through that, and I always reacted in different ways, but it finally made sense. And you know, and the worst part about it is that I love going to water, but I didn't realize it triggered me. The basement's another story, but unless it's done up in a guy's kind of way, then I don't care, right? But no, just going to the basement, just the smell is what got me. Even the smell of the water would trigger me, and then I would either act at the time. But that creative awareness, is how I call it. And it was awesome when I figured that out, because then I was able to finally get into some grounding techniques, which we're going to talk about as well.
May I ask you, Stuart, then, that becoming aware of your triggers, was it prompted by a question to yourself? What is happening to me? Why is this happening?
Well, that's a really good question, because it was probably a combination of a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One being the conversation, as I've never had it before, ever, probably being the biggest thing, because yes, it was there. It was in my body. It was it was all through me, but I never had conversation about it, only with myself, not even really understanding. But when I got around other people, other survivors that have had the same experience, and then with great facilitators as well that understood the process, what I was feeling and thinking, and they explained it to me, then it all made total sense to me. And therefore, I was able to, you know, come up with some kind of a plan for grounding or doing something
exactly.
to manage it, right?
Mm-hmm. So that awareness, that creative awareness that you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And which is really awesome, because it kind of led up to other things as well. So it was a great stepping stone or a great building block to begin my healing process when I came here.
You know, we have often heard people talk about five W's or W5. Now, it might be a little simplistic, but I think it's a good, easy way to remember as to this consciousness, this awareness, which is necessary for healing or getting onto the journey of healing, because the journey is not linear. Mm-hmm. But those questions are very important. And the five W's, just to review for the listeners, is what, when, why, where, who. And then I also add the H is how. So that can be a very simple formula, but a very powerful formula to begin to understand when one gets triggered, what is triggering one, why is it happening, what am I doing with that trigger.
Now, can we talk a little bit more? Thank you, Sabra. A little bit more about the feelings and the behaviors on top of that as well. Like when we talk about feeling vulnerable. Now, I know that before I started having the so-called creative awareness, as I call it for myself, I had all these feelings I didn't understand. So in order to place them in places that I could understand them, I know what I did here, but is there other ways of approaching it to find those feelings, or at least to understand those feelings? If I'm asking the right question, or if I you understand my question.
For sure, Stuart. I think like there's so many different ways that a person could recognize, you know, what are the feelings that are surfacing, and you've mentioned one of them, other survivors, right? Being in peer-to-peer support groups, journaling is another way, doing research and watching videos online about what triggers are and how to ground yourself. There's lots of information out there on the web, on YouTube especially, even motivational videos to get you out of moments of what we call stuckness, or moments of feeling demotivated by things, or moments of heightened triggers. There's lots of meditation on YouTube, guided meditations that people can use also to sit with feelings, right? Because it's you reminded me of that confused awareness stage of healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're trying to figure out what's happening, but you're not quite yet sure. You're feeling really overwhelmed. I think the first step is to label exactly what you're feeling. And a lot of times people will say, well, I feel fine, right? Or I feel good. I feel well. These are not actual feelings, they're states. So you're looking for the actual feeling, like I am sad, I am happy, I am anxious, I am feeling overwhelmed, like I can't sit in my chair, and that's what's happening to me. So making those connections about what is the feeling, actual feeling that is coming up for the person. And sometimes like a therapist, like Sabra, would help someone to recognize what those feelings are when they are used to putting up the masks of I'm fine, I'm well, I'm good. We get used to these patterns of these automatic responses when they're not really the true feeling that's underneath the I'm fine or I'm good. You know, I'm happy, I'm sad. Those are actual feelings, so labeling them.
And as Maria pointed out, it's to make those connections very, very important. And where one can begin is first by just being mindful and attentive to one's breathing, one's blood flow. Where am I feeling the knots? Where am I getting tightened? Where are my muscles tensing up? Because what happens is that there is a physiological side to that feeling. So the physiological side is actually happens according to neuroscientists is the first step. And then what we do as human beings, we label that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling frustrated, I'm feeling panicky, I am feeling anxious, I'm feeling resentful. So this is what we begins that whole process. And I think what is important is the starting point is recognition as to what is occurring. And following that up, well, this is what's happening. This is what I'm feeling. These are my emotions. And the question is, what could be causing it?
Mm-hmm. And to add to that, Sabra, that sometimes, you know, numb is an emotional state,
yes.
Right? And a lot of times people may not associate that. They're like, I have no feelings. And then it's the aha moment comes up. Oh, I actually feel numb. I don't feel like anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's important to vocalize that too. And then explore, as you said, what is leading to that numbness? Is it a state of overwhelm and the person's body and mind have shut down the feeling aspect so that they can be safe in those moments?
One of the underlying things in our approaches or framework, therapeutic framework that we use at Gatehouse, I use it a lot in my work, is what we call cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
What we help the individual or members of a group, if we're working in a group, is to understand what is the connection and relationship between thoughts, feelings, and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a relationship, and that relationship is very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Why I like to use the word dynamic, because what it does is that once we begin to understand the relationship between thoughts, feelings, behaviors, we can then make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And choices about having some control. Because the more we are able to exercise choice and control over the states that we experience, the more likely we are to then enjoy and that sense of wholeness that I alluded to right at the beginning.
I love joy. That's an awesome
mm-hmm.
feeling.
Joy.
Exhilaration.
Yes.
You know, exactly.
And then I think when working with survivors, what I have learned, and I'm connecting it this to joy and that wholesomeness, because it is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to remain in a state of helpless darkness, or do I want to be in a state of wholesome joy, life, and loving?
Mm-hmm.
The first one is very often, and is from my experience with individual clinical work, is that when a person is staying in the state of victimhood, what one is doing is relinquishing that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because by staying in victimhood, we become tied or tethered to the fear and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why understanding the trigger, the or triggers that prompts the states is very, very important for one to then exercise that choice that one wants to make, i.e., what are my options? Victimhood? Or I use my, you know, as survivors, individuals have only demonstrated how capable they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does a person then maximize that capacity that is within them? And it's only through that work and through understanding the relationship between thoughts, feelings, and behavior.
And it takes a lot of work. Like, we make it sound like it's a beautiful little triangle, and it is a triangle. It's represented in textbooks like that, right? And I add another one that I've seen, too, the outcomes in people's lives. So if you're not paying attention to thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, what are the outcomes that you're getting in your life right now that you want to change, right? So if you're not able to recognize those, then go to the results in your life. What are those results that you're getting? If you're not pleased or happy with those results, if you're not functioning at the level that you have the capacity to be functioning, because the word capacity is really important to this process, then start with your outcomes. What are the results in your life, and work your way backwards from those? What are the behaviors that lead you to those results? How do you feel about those behaviors? And backtrack to what were you thinking that led you to feeling that way, that led you to behave that way, that led to these outcomes. So you're seeing those connections, those forging those connections. Eventually you will start to see also patterns in your behavior or your feelings or your thoughts and how those connections align to the outcomes that you have. So even interrupting one of these points on that triangle that I've now made a square,
a rectangle,
however you want to see it.
Interrupt the status quo.
If you interrupt one of those areas and start to change or shift even the way you think about the capacity that you do have, right? Because the person may say, it's just this, or I can't do that. Maybe there's an action that you can do that's not the totality of the original action. For example, I know that because of my lovely arthritic hip, I will likely never run a marathon. And I will say that because it's not my thing. But can I walk 5K? Yes, I have the capacity to walk 5K at a different pace. I know I can do it. I've done it 3 times for the Scotiabank Waterfront Marathon with my lovely team of Gatehouse folks here, right? So I know I have that capacity. And my thought of I can't may limit me at this moment. Maybe, who knows? Maybe my arthritis will subside and one day I'll run a marathon, right?
Yeah.
But the I can't is not something that I have to, I have the capacity not to stay stuck in that, right?
So you're not limiting yourself.
Exactly.
And you're not choosing victimhood as a result of the reality of the arthritic hip.
Exactly.
Right?
And
yes.
So you are acknowledging, you're recognizing that this is what you're working with or dealing with.
Right.
But within that recognition, you also are saying to yourself, but I do have capacity. I am a human being with capacity and potential. So I am going to try myself. So that's how the 5K walk came about.
You know, and the best thing about what you're saying, though, too, Maria, is that you didn't defeat yourself. So the point is you did it. Whether you ran or walked, it's really irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. And you did it too, Story. I see you going to the water a lot on your Twitter. You go Algonquin Park. There's been a few posts, right? You were talking earlier about water being a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Water was a trigger for me on a whole other level.
Mm-hmm.
And I rented a house for 2 years with a really deep pool. And I learned to swim in the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
I immersed myself literally in cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
There's exposure activities that we can do that safely expose us.
Yeah.
Now, I had someone outside of the pool who's an experienced swimmer ready to jump in and save me if I was going to get into the drowning stage, but I didn't. And I managed to make it across the pool a whole bunch of times and felt and actually stood in that pool floating and doing the treading the water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with my daughter actually, and feeling like I just conquered a huge, massive childhood fear.
So you celebrated each accomplishment because it was a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And each time you went into the pool, you acknowledged that you had this fear.
Yep.
but you also acknowledge that you got into the pool.
That's right.
And that you were able to tread water.
That's right. With no ground under me. That was the scary thing.
Right. Now, Maria, you just prompted a question. We, you know, often we hear therapists say one should not judge one's fear.
Mm-hmm.
How does that play out? Or one should not judge one's emotions, I should say.
I knew I was scared. Like, I'm really hard on myself. So let me start off with that one, right? So I'm always judging myself. And that's something that slowly but surely I do work on. I do catch myself using the limiting words like just or I can't. And figure out other ways that I can do an activity that is not going to put me in harm, right? And again, establishing those safety nets. But when you're talking about like judging my state, I was really scared. At one point, I was not hyperventilating, but I was starting to breathe more rapidly. And my daughter said to me, "Mom, don't breathe like that or else you are going to drown," right? And I'm like, oh, refocus. That's right. I'm safe. I'm good. I have somebody that's trained in swimming and they can rescue me. I'm good. I'm safe. It's about that mental grounding too, right? And catching oneself when I am saying things like, maybe I should go back to the edge. I'm too far away. I'm going to die. Like it can go to really quick catastrophizing real fast, especially when you're in that, you're actually exposed to that triggering event in the way that I was, literally immersed in water. But yeah, I'm the hardest critic of myself.
So would you say, Maria, that from what you just shared with us, what I have learned that what you did was you noticed that there was an emotional trigger,
mm-hmm.
right? And the sooner you discovered that there was a trigger, that there was a threat, the quicker you could work with assessing whether that threat was real or not.
That's right, because it can get really unreal real fast.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
Where I catastrophize that, you know what, if I don't make it to the wall, I'm going to die. I'm going to sink. I'm like heavy as a rock. I'm too big. This pool is not big enough for me. Like those kinds of things. Like I would think that if I don't reach the wall, that my arms are going to give out on me or my back's going to spasm and I'm going to drown. And those are my mind works that way when I have like major anxiety about a trigger like water. And I have reasons why I have this trigger. Like in childhood, I never swam past that deep end line because I always thought that, you know, that would mean probably death. And then later on as a young adult, I nearly drowned in a pool, but was rescued out of that pool. And but able to, again, years later, think about, I know that this house, for example, that I'm renting has a pool. And I thought, well, I'm renting a house with a big trigger in my backyard. This is amazing. This is something new because I would never have done that before, even like consider a property that has.
So you actually challenged yourself.
I did very much so for 2 years. But again, not linear. Takes time, takes practice,
exactly.
And takes awareness.
And that reminds me to remind our listeners that Maria and I, with you, Stuart, did a show a while back ago.
Yes, we did.
On that healing is not linear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That it's left, right, up, down, sideways, you
inside
know.
Inside out.
Inside out.
Oh, you name it. It's there.
So we just wanted to highlight that it is not linear and it's not overnight.
No. No, it's many nights.
2 years.
You know?
2 years.
So how did you find doing, like, with what you're saying, like, even just using the pool as an example, you know, prior to getting that, like, how much work did you have to do for yourself to figure that out?
I was okay, you know, in the shallow end because, again, I could feel the floor beneath my feet.
Yeah.
So that was my safety, right? As soon as I got to the edge where it starts to dip down, I was already starting to feel that anxiousness and the catastrophization coming on.
Mm-hmm.
But again, paying attention to breathing was something I did. I also started by going around the edges of the pool so I would hold on just because I knew I was safe there. And then having that person on the outside looking down at me just to make sure that, you know, if I slipped or anything, they would jump in and take me out kind of thing. And just also paying attention to what was going on in my mind as I was doing that, like what thoughts I was having, like I was going
to
die.
So to add on to and reflecting back to what was said already now, so So how did you keep track? I know you like to journal. So did you journal it and track it that way? Is that what you did to keep an eye on it?
I think in this case, mentally? Stuart, it was like what we call exposure, being in the trigger itself, right? So if it's not a swimming trigger, so if your trigger is being around in public spaces, there's lots of people around, then safely going to a grocery store. And if you can't go into the grocery store, if you can walk up to the door and then walk away and then think about what you thought about as you were getting to that door. Mm-hmm. So it's putting in safety measures to expose yourself to that triggering event, right? So being in a park, if you're afraid of forest, but a nice park with lots of trees, like High Park, where we're fortunate we have all these safe places that we can go and immerse ourselves or expose ourselves to these triggering things to work through those anxieties that surface as a result of these triggers.
And if I may add, is that, again, going back to the choice and control and commitment to self-responsibility, what I hear Maria illustrating to us through these examples and your own journey with swimming is that you do make it, you recognize, you become aware of what you're feeling and then choosing what you want to feel. Do you want to remain in that state of anxiety and fear, or do you want to move towards that mastery, if you will, for want of a better word, i.e. swimming, or going into that supermarket, or going into the subway the station, which is underground, or going up CN Tower if one is afraid of heights?
You know, you just reminded me, like, I have an agoraphobic client. And agoraphobia is a fear of going outside, right? The whole world becomes a danger because the person has made it so safe for them in their home that going outside is the biggest danger, that everything could go wrong. So I invited this person to walk to their door and then invited them to open their door, take a look outside, and then close the door. So that's a very safe exposure to do for a person with that kind of condition, and then journal about that, how to make them feel, so that they could eventually make it out to, and they did, to a park bench that was near their residence and sat down and then went back in the house. So it takes time and practice and exposure to the trigger in a very safe way, much like what you did by going to, you know, the being around water and noticing it. And are you a swimmer as well?
Oh, okay, I'm a very good swimmer.
It's just being around water. Okay. Yeah. So in my case, it was like the swimming itself is the trigger, the pool or the lake. But yeah, in this other person's case is being outside of their confined space, the safety confined space that they had set up for themselves. So when it was a huge celebration when the person made it to that bench and sat down for 2 minutes and then came back out and went home. But huge.
I want to say quickly, thank you to the listeners that are following us on Twitter feed. I just let you know that I see you, I acknowledge you. I'm just letting you know that thank you for listening. And I just wanted to say that. And thank you for what you're saying. Now, again, it falls back to creative awareness, right? Is what I call it, creative awareness. Because even though I was triggered by the water, like you're talking about, I still went ahead and did it. I from a very, very young age, my younger brother and I, we were in swimming lessons from a very, very young age. So I could have been a lifeguard if I wanted to. I went that far enough. And even my daughter, for example, she got in the water very well, and she's a yachtsman. So she loves the water. And me and my younger brother, we were really, really good. We're like little fish. But the unfortunate part was some of my abuse was done by water.
Mm-hmm.
And the basement, as I pointed out, the water being probably one of the biggest things, I didn't even realize that was making me go do what I did.
Right.
I wasn't even aware of it. There's a freaky part of it. I just wasn't aware of it.
What's interesting, like, here I am, I see myself as an introvert, and I used to get very anxious when I had to do public speaking. That, for me, was a way of learning about myself, my anxiety around it, which could have held me back, just like how the fear of swimming or the water held you back. But what I did, like both of you, you immersed yourself in it. I started teaching. I started doing workshops. Mm-hmm. And the more I did it, the more I began to recognize and acknowledge, my fear is receding, my anxiety is receding. And why is it receding? Why is it getting less and less? It's because I'm doing it more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting in touch with the capacity within me.
And how did that feel for you, though, when you did that? I mean, it obviously took a bit of time, right?
It takes time. It took time. And I'm not, I would be lying if I said I don't still feel anxious.
You still feel
I still feel. But what I have now learned that, you know, these butterflies that are flying all over.
Mm.
Now what I do is I become very aware of my emotional state. And then I take my deep breath. I relax. I kind of separate myself from that feeling of anxiety and fear and say, now I need to center myself so that I can do what I am intending to do. What is my intention that I can carry forward? So again, the relationship between the thought, the feelings, the behavior, the purpose, or outcome, or intentionality, are very, very important in terms of guiding us to getting through the triggers.
Now that's just so important. I mean, just finding that stuff for yourself is I mean, for me, it was quite a task, and actually, I heard others struggle quite immensely just to figure that out. And it does take time. And I guess the biggest thing is to be patient with yourself.
Yep.
As it will come, the more you work at it, the more it'll come. So, can we just reiterate about awareness and keeping track of this before we move on to the next thing? So, like journaling, for example, is a really, really good thing to find out what's going on with you. And unless you're really good at taking mental notes, if you have a tape recorder, you can if you don't like writing, I mean, you could talk, and I've got the phones nowadays, you could just talk into your voice recorder, and you could record that thought on how you felt that time that you were, when you had that insight or you were triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, like in finding out this stuff, is you got to remember it. And we don't always remember it because, you know, we have busy lives and things going on. So this is just a great way of doing it, or any way that you can remember that instant that happened. And also too, even a bigger note is you remember those thoughts and feelings you were thinking at that time that you were triggered.
And if I might just add something to that, whether it's audio taping it, writing, journaling it, you could also use sketches, drawing, and date it so that you can at some point, if you want to and if you so wish to, because I'm not here to tell you what to do, anyone, and to any of our listeners, but if you do wish, you can look back and trace that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And tracing that journey can be extremely fulfilling and self-satisfying. To see, I was here at one point. This is how far I've come within so many days or so many weeks or so many years. And this is where I want to get to.
You know, and that's a beautiful thing to say that, because we often don't do that. I'm speaking for myself now, is where I don't often recognize how far I've came, and then I just get an epiphany, and oh my gosh, I used to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I seem to draw a lot of happy smiley faces. I went back to my yearbooks from high school, and there's a lot of those in there. So I was like, oh, interesting. I still do that today. Like, I'll leave somebody a note, and there's usually a smiley face.
And what I am doing is I'm going back to my notes. And it's so interesting. It's revealing. When I say notes, I could be sitting somewhere. I have a little notepad, and I make a note. And now we have the telephones that make it so much easier for us, as Stuart mentioned earlier. I just jot down. It doesn't have to be a full sentence. It's just the key words. And what is interesting is that then I forget about it, and weeks later, months later, some conversation comes up, and then I remember, gee, I made a note about this somewhere. And when I go back, here it is, right there in front of me, and it reminds me. And what it's also helping me now, in fact, I was sharing some of my thoughts with a friend, and she said, Sabra, there's a book in here.
Yes, there is.
I didn't think about it that way until she mentioned it. So you never know what could come out of your jottings
mm-hmm.
or of your doodling, mm-hmm. or of your drawing happy faces.
That's right. That's right.
You know, it's funny, just one little point to that, too. You're talking about happy faces. And all when I first started coming to the gatehouse, in my participant's manual that I got, I started drawing faces. But none of my faces were happy faces. They were always faces of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and for some reason, now in the last year and a bit, I have stopped doing that. But I've got a few books, like the Phase
mm-hmm.
2 1 manuals and the Phase 1 manuals. Not only do I have the names of the people I facilitated with, but I doodle whenever I think I'm triggered. I don't even realize, but they're not happy faces. They're all thoughts of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But it's finally stopped doing. I finally stopped doing it over a period of time. I didn't even realize that. I'm only thinking of that now, only because you brought up about the happy faces, and realized, hey, I haven't done that in over a year.
Mm-hmm. You see, this is where, and I think Maria mentioned it earlier, that talking to people. Sharing.
Mm.
If you feel safe, you must feel safe, of course, with that person
mm.
or people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so wonderful about Gatehouse. When people do get together, it is through the conversations that there is a connection that's created, what I call connectivity.
Mm.
And it's through that connectivity do we get those aha moments. Gee, that happy face. And then you said, Stuart, I stopped doing that. My face is where sad, and now I just realize I don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And what this is about, and tying it up to, again, our approach here at Gatehouse through relationships, connectivity, the cognitive behavioral therapeutic approaches we take in our groups.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do in a way, and this is what dealing with triggering is to figuring it out what they are,
mm-hmm.
and then outsmarting the brain.
Mm-hmm. Which is not easy to do.
Which is not easy to do, but you know what? We can do it.
It's possible.
It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
And through that, we are evolving as human beings, and we're also evolving towards becoming more emotionally intelligent.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that one. That's for sure. Definitely becoming more emotionally intelligent. Intellect and also in touch, right?
Yeah.
With what's going on,
mm-hmm.
which was a daunting affair for me over the years, but I have strived to better places, that's for sure, after doing the work that I've done on myself.
Would you say then that that was also probably that awareness, that creative awareness, also helped you to set your boundaries?
Oh yes, oh yeah, most definitely, because I have very firm boundaries. And anybody who really personally knows me really, really well knows that I have pretty firm boundaries. And I didn't have that when I first came here at all. I very, very, well, kind of all over the map, rigid, crossed, bounced, banged, you name it. My boundaries were horrible, mainly towards myself and others, but mainly towards myself. But now it's just like, no means no. And I have no hesitation saying it whatsoever, right? Even for the dumbest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And don't feel guilty about it whatsoever.
So you see that connection between choice and control again.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Definitely, definitely.
You're in control.
I'm in control. At least I'd like to think I am anyway most of the time.
As much in control as it is humanly possible.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, let's bounce into the grounding now.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to add some more to the entree, as they say.
I think it was good what the boundaries, right, that you brought up. And how that ties into having boundaries around self-care,
mm-hmm.
And establishing boundaries for yourself with self-care. So that's being productive with your boundaries, or having positive boundaries with the self first, so that you can practice those and have better boundaries with other people as a result as well. So if your boundary, for example, is, you know, you're going out on Saturdays and going to that water, and, you know, going with someone on a walk and sticking to that plan, you're putting up that healthy boundary for yourself to do that work, because it's needed and you deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think deserving of something is that guilt and shame relationship that comes up, right? When somebody says you deserve to be happy, you deserve to have, you know, a relaxing day without anxiety, that in itself could be a trigger for someone to feel like I don't deserve anything. I'm not worthy of anything, right? And that's working through that shame first. Where did that come from? How does it make you feel? What are the triggers that are shame based that need to be addressed?
And again, that was a tough thing to work through, was that shame and guilt mm-hmm. tied to the boundaries that you're mm-hmm. talking about. Because with those boundaries, when I'd say no, I would feel guilty before. If I even thought no,
exactly.
I'd feel guilty and go, oh my God, that's going to make me look so bad. I feel bad enough as it is, and I'm going to look even worse.
Right.
So I just say yes and do it whether I can do it or not.
This is why I brought up boundaries, because I feel that boundaries are so important. And as both you, Stuart and Maria, have mentioned, that it's so related to grounding oneself, because grounding oneself can help one be in touch with what is going on within oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And by being in touch with what is going on within oneself, it helps us be more mindful. And when we are mindful, we are able to then, again, all things considered being equal, we can make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So mindfulness does help with making more effective choices for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And by being more mindful of oneself, I think one of the outcomes is that one becomes more mindful of others as well.
Mm-hmm.
And relationships can improve.
Or you stop the relationship.
Or you stop the relationship.
Yeah.
Because that's the choice you are now, you know, you probably have to make, because now you know what your boundaries are,
mm-hmm.
what's going on within you,
mm-hmm.
what makes you feel more wholesome,
mm-hmm.
and what you need to do to be wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it means yes to end the relationship,
mm-hmm.
to move on to something else.
And here's a way to feel less guilty about ending
yeah.
relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Do it from a place of gratitude.
Yes,
that's
you.
What I do.
Yes.
Like, what did this relationship teach me
mm-hmm.
that I needed to learn from it, right? I ask myself those questions. I come up with the answers. And then I say I'm grateful for it. Despite, you know, it might have brought these unhealthy boundaries or unhealthy situations, it also brought me these positive aspects where I learned that I don't want to be this certain way or be in this type of relationship. So I really like what you said there.
And being grounded, and when we're going through that process of, like we talked about, whether I stay in the relationship or don't stay in the relationship, or this is the boundary that I need to establish, because again, as we mentioned in previous episodes, that setting boundaries is teaching others how to treat us.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to start with self,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is why boundaries are very important. And I think that grounding is about being centered, being connected. And when one feels connected, and I have to do the standing, I know the audience, or you know, listeners can't see this, but when I feel grounded, I actually feel that my feet are firmly,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm firmly standing on Mother Earth.
Mm.
Mother Earth has not disappointed me.
Mm.
She has held me all these many years. So she's going to hold me again. And that sense of connectedness that runs through the center of one's body makes one feel more reassured about what one is going to say, what one is going to do,
mm-hmm.
and talk more authentically about one's feelings, one's behaviors, and one's actions.
It's amazing. And Sabra actually stood up in the office, by the way.
Now, let's talk a little bit about meditation and pause, how that can help you along this path as well.
What does pause stand for around here, Stuart?
paying attention unreveals sacred experience.
That's right. And sacred in this sense is not necessarily to do with, you know, religious aspects, because sometimes people associate that. It can be for people, but that's fine too.
Your choice.
Around here, sacredness is about being aware in the moment. That's a sacred experience for the person when they have the light bulb moment or the aha moment or the, oh, now I know where this comes from moment. So paying attention unveils sacred experiences is a way to pause and pause. So if you think of a pause button, even on your remote, just like the ones you have, I don't know if people use, I guess they don't use VCRs anymore, but DVD players or, you know, you have the pause button. So hit the pause button when you're triggered, hit the pause button, stop and think about what's happening for you in that moment and how can you make that moment safer for yourself, whether it be through grounding. Do you want to add something in, Sabra? I know you're like, yes.
Go ahead. For example, I just used, because you prompted something with Maria, is that, you know, we're talking about grounding, but what you just raised is so important, because in order to choose to be grounded, you need to know what not being grounded means.
Looks like,
right? Or feels like, or looks like. And so that's what I wanted to say. So when I feel, like, again, let's say talking in front of a group, and when I feel those butterflies going in every which direction, and I begin to feel a little, what I say, discombobulated, you know, I don't know whether I'm coming or going, and I feel, you know, oh my God, I'm going to forget everything. My mind, my state is telling me that I'm not grounded. And just now, what do I do to ground myself?
Hit the pause button.
Hit the pause button.
Pause.
Now, will meditation help you to find those points?
It depends on the person, right? Like, we have this lovely list of grounding techniques that people can use. So we just talked about a pause. Now we're going on to meditation. Some people are really, quote unquote, triggered by meditation because it can also bring about many thoughts at once, many awarenesses at once. It can also feel overwhelming. Know that that is quite, quote unquote, normal to happen during meditation. Other misconception of meditation is that you're supposed to quiet the mind, and that's not there's no prescription that says this is exactly how you do meditation and your mind will be super quiet and you will feel totally calm. That's not usually what happens, although some people are able to do that with many years of practice. They can quiet the mind and do that, but still there are thoughts. We're human beings and they're always going to come up.
That's exactly what happened to me first when I started meditation. I just could not stop my mind from traveling. It went every which way that I did not want to go. And it had a mind of its own, and it would go. My thoughts would go. And I would judge them. And the more I judged my thoughts, I was judging myself, and meditation became more difficult. And what I did, I gave up. I said, meditation and I just don't work. For about a year, I did not practice it. I went back to it with more self-compassion and with also being able to forgive myself. When my mind does go off, I stop judging. And that's what I talked about, when I said I exercise more self-compassion and forgiveness. So when that mind went somewhere, that was okay. It came back in. And now I can meditate. Not for very long, but the fact that I can meditate for 5-10 minutes, I think that that's a very good start for me.
Sounds pretty long to me. That's pretty good.
And if I can add to this, in meditation, like it takes a lot of practice, and not everybody can do it, as Maria pointed out in the beginning of this. And from my experience with meditation, I meditated for many, many years. I don't do it as often now as I would like to, but I will try to make an effort to get back into it as time goes on. But one of the biggest things I've learned in order to get a hold of it is I learned from my sensei many, many, many years ago was when you begin to start meditating and you find you're struggling to focus on a certain thing, to keep it really, really simple. And what we did to keep it really simple was just for 2 minutes, okay, or even 1 minute, and only focus on your breathing.
Yes.
In, out, slow out. Pay attention as it goes down into your diaphragm and down, right down into your belly button, right into your core. And pay attention as it's coming back out through your diaphragm again, and out through your lungs, now through your lips, and feel it. And just only concentrate on that, but only do it for a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly build yourself up. It's a very simple way to get started in it. And because I know a lot of people have done that, and it's like, oh, my God, I can't do that. It's just my mind's too all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So how I was taught was to do it that way because my mind used to race, as you described it, as Sabra, because my mind was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no control at all. It was kind of like a car out of control or something like that, right? But I could not get a hold of it. So I practiced by doing the breathing, and it was very simple. And just for a couple of minutes, and then in 5 minutes, it turned into 5 minutes, and 10 minutes, and a half hour, and then an hour. And an hour is a long time to meditate. I've only ever done it a couple of times, but I usually do my meditation for 15 minutes to 20 minutes is about where
that's,
I go.
That's exactly what was the process for me, too,
mm-hmm.
is to first start of becoming aware of my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And how deep or how shallow.
Mm.
And as I became more aware, I challenged myself to take the breath deeper by saying my exhale should be longer than my inhale.
Mm.
And I got started imagining that the air that I was breathing in was going to these different extremities of my body.
Mm.
And that's how I began to kind of rein that mind in.
Which is not easy to do either.
It's not easy to do.
Not easy to do.
But on a physiological level, you're bringing oxygen
mm-hmm.
into all those different areas of your body in a more grounded state, which helps your organs to function. You feel better. You feel less anxious, less tired.
Relieve all that stress you got balled up inside you.
Well, I do that sometimes in the morning. You know, if any parent listening out there, getting your kids ready for school, talk about trigger.
Mm.
Sometimes I have to sit down, and I say have to because I know I'm feeling overwhelmed by getting everybody ready out the door kind of thing to start the day. And I sit in the kitchen and I'll just do one of these. And I'll close my eyes and I'll do another one. And then, you know, my daughter sometimes goes, Mom, are you okay? I'm like, I'm meditating because that's needed.
And I think what that is a good segue into another aspect of grounding and self-care is having some rituals. I'm using the word rituals more in the sense of like a boundary again. So if you're at work and you've had, like many workplaces can be stressful.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the ritual? So you leave work, and it's so much easier to say than do, is leave everything behind and go home with a clear mind and clear state of mind. But sometimes some of us need something to help us get into the frame of mind of now being home, which is supposed to be one sanctuary, so to speak, right? Or sacred space.
Mm.
So a ritual could be that once you go home, you sit down with a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Or some of us immediately change, get out of our work clothes. It's a physical act, but it's also a very emotional act with kind of psychological and emotional benefits. Saying, I've put this marker now, I'm separating from my work, I am now in my home, personal space.
Great self-imposed boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I find that a lot more difficult for me because I go home to a computer again because of being in school. But my ritual that you're talking about is going to say hello to everyone that's in the house. I'll go
mm-hmm.
say hello to my kids, my dad, my brother, and then I'll go say hello to my cats. Because I love my cats. There's a lot of hellos there.
Thank you for that. Now, what about the five senses exercise? I'm really curious about that.
So see, touch, smell, feel, hear. If you are in a space where you are feeling triggered, so the people that go into the supermarket, right, and they have that phobia of being around other people or being in the pool or any of these triggers that we have been talking about before, notice what you are hearing in that moment. Notice what taste you have in your mouth, or is there a texture around maybe that you can feel, like the jacket that I'm wearing is a little bit like denim, so it has a like coarse kind of feeling material. What can you see in front of you, right? And sometimes, so those are taking people through the senses. That's a way of grounding yourself in the presence, right? So if you're thinking about or feeling triggered, then your body or your mind is in the past, in the traumatic experience that is bringing you, I like what you said, the trauma reminder, right? So you're being reminded of your trauma, and your mind or in body and or both are feeling it in that moment. So five senses is a way to ground yourself in the present.
And it's also related to what we call, we use it in or visualization.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use the five senses to become aware of what your state is, and then then the next step is to desire what kind of state you want to be in, or what is your desired state, name it, and then evoke the emotions that are associated with the desired state. So for example, I want to feel relaxed, calm. I yearn for. So I use my senses and I place myself in a setting. And I think about, visualize the sounds that I associate with relaxation, comfort, with safety.
Rain and thunderstorms for me.
You know, exactly. You know, it doesn't have to be like what I said, you know, calm, the sound of the ocean.
Right, I love that too.
You know?
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
So whatever works for you. So what we also want, the one of the important messages is it has to be tailored to what you can work with, what your needs are and what works for you. There's no one size fits all, and there is no recipe. You have to try meditation. You can try visualization, the five senses. You can try out rituals. You can try out also journaling. You can try out drawing. There's so many different ways. Walking.
Mm-hmm.
And walking mindfully can be very therapeutic. I did that for about 2 years when I was dealing with an injury and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I got into the practice of mindful walking. I went into nature. I was surrounded by trees, was surrounded by water, rock, earth, everything to me around that I associate with nature, except dangerous animals.
Coyotes.
Coyotes, you know. No, I had a stick because where I am, there are coyotes.
I know.
But, you know.
I've seen them.
But what I think the message is that you've got to find your own way. You've got to find what works for you.
And I love what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. And one thing I've always told participants when in this discovery, like you're talking about, is if you fail, try something else.
Something else.
Because there's going to be something out there for you. You know, I know I tried a couple of different things. And even when I did find something, I had to switch after a while to do something different. Because my mind was, okay, that's not stimulating anymore. I need to try something different.
And you see, the brain is so smart that it stops working because we might be getting into a mode of what we call complacency.
Mm-hmm.
When we get into that state of complacency, that which worked for us previously is not working anymore. And so now we have nature's gift, and this is why gratitude is so important, that I need to now come up with something else or pull out something else from my bag of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to go back to something worked 6 months ago because you need to change it up, you know.
And to keep
it's
it interesting.
It's like that circuit training, I think, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's a good thing about the internet nowadays, provided you have that, is that you can find so many different things to ground yourself, whether it be meditation or for a walk. If you're not sure what to do, you'll find something very easily nowadays whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, again, you know, I seem to be jumping, but meditation. I know of some individuals that I've worked with created a space in their home. And one of the grounding elements for them was having stones that they had picked up or she had picked up from her walks. And that reminded her, and that got helped her ground. So she incorporated meditation through something.
Hmm.
Could be sound, it could be feel, it could be sight. And you see how, again, the senses come in.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because that was one of my biggest things that I did, is I did exactly what you said. Is when I went for a walk down to the water, I found a stone and I put it in my pocket. And that was my secret way of grounding, and nobody ever knew.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I was triggered. I may have been standing at the back wall, but same time, I had my hand in the stone and I didn't leave. I stayed where I would have left.
And that reminds me of people who are nervous in doing public speaking. So we can exactly use that same idea. Have something in your pocket or in your hand, in the palm of your hand, and that helps you ground. So find something that helps you ground yourself.
It can even be a paper clip small enough to hide. And
there's no
purpose
over this.
Exactly. Well, get the plastic covered.
I'm grounded now.
Yoga. Yoga is another.
Yes.
Another, yes, absolutely. Yoga is another great thing for bringing you back down, for sure.
Yeah. And we're lucky to have Nicola here volunteering her time as a yoga, trauma-informed yoga practitioner with people.
Yeah.
And they're doing poses. She was trying to get me in the class last week. I'm like, I can't. I don't have time right now.
That's the beautiful thing is with the yoga that Nicola is doing is it does not matter your ability. It's more. You know, you don't have to do some of those crazy yoga moves. You know, it's just really basic stuff, because we're not there to hurt you, your body. You're there to bring awareness to your body.
Right.
And you, in order to do that, obviously you don't want to hurt yourself, but the type of therapy, or rather the type of yoga that it is, it helps you bring those thoughts and emotions. It's kind of like drawing a picture, like we talked about earlier. It's the same idea. It's only different is you're using your body this time to find that, and then you write it out.
So the term that I am familiar with is restorative yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm so glad. So I didn't know that we were
just
offering
started
that.
Last
just
week.
Started.
Just
yeah.
started
yeah.
last week.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not that behind.
No.
Okay.
No.
So that's terrific, because I think again what we're trying to do here at Gatehouse is really take a holistic, wholesome approach to healing.
Mm.
It's which incorporates mind, body, soul, and spirit.
Absolutely.
And so having yoga as an added program here that we offer participants is wonderful, because we have art therapy,
mm-hmm.
we have the groups, we have drop-in, now we have yoga.
Mm-hmm. It's also the writing.
And there's writing. Mm-hmm.
That's separate from the yoga, though.
Right.
Even.
And then we, now that spring is here, we will have our
garden labyrinth open
and
again.
Labyrinth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Many
soon,
ways to
soon.
Ground yourself.
Yeah.
And they're free. And if you're not in the Toronto area, I know that there's like free yoga that happens in different communities. If you just Google free yoga plus whatever town that you're in or city that you're in, and see if there's local yoga groups, meetups that do yoga together that are trauma-informed, that are free, that you can access, or local meditation groups. I've often found these just online by Googling yoga free plus the town or city that I'm in, and found resources. So
they're out there.
Yep, they're out there. It's just a way to search, right? Like you have to know how to find these things through Google by using these key terms. So the plus sign helps to narrow it down to what you're looking for. Exactly.
Mm.
You know, the way my mind works is that I hear Maria say something or Stuart say something, and I am prompted, or my memory is, what's the word? Stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
What came to mind is that the connectivity that we offer here at Gatehouse. And you mentioned you can find it anywhere. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be at the
mm-hmm.
Gatehouse. What it is about that relating and connecting. So it doesn't have to be about numbers, but it's about the quality of the relationship.
Right.
So we go for quality rather than quantity.
Exactly.
Now, also, did you want to add any more about the grounding, or can we go on and talk about how to evaluate your levels of of self-care.
So I would love to move on to that evaluation, because I just want to be mindful of
another
our time
exactly,
too, right?
Yeah.
So there's a little note here about a self-care assessment that I actually personally use on myself, and it really helps me. You can find these tools online. So if you're a writer, you can totally write about what you're doing for self-care. How do you presently feel about your self-care? What are other things that you can try for self-care? How do you feel about those? What are your fears around those? And you can do it that way. I love checklists. Sometimes there's pre-made sheets that you can find online. So I use this really great website called therapistaid.com. And if you type in therapistaid.com worksheets on Google, you should be able to find that site. And maybe we'll post it on Twitter feed later,
yeah.
Stuart, after the show. There's a self-care assessment that you can use. And again, self-care activities are things that you do to maintain good health and improve your overall well-being. You'll find that many of these things you already do as part of your normal routine. On this assessment, you'll see things listed under like psychological, physical, spiritual self-care items. So I'll just list a couple of the physical ones, like eating healthy foods, right? That may be difficult. You rate how do you do this right now? And on this self-care assessment from that website, 1 is I do this poorly, 2 is I do this okay, 3 is I do this well, and the star would be I would like to improve this by doing it more frequently or trying it out. So you go through these different levels of self-care. Another physical one is getting enough sleep, rest when you're sick. It's something that I hear a lot of survivors of child sexual abuse not doing when they're sick, not resting enough. Again, that feeling of guilt, or do I deserve to be in bed all day?
Yeah.
This is a waste of my time. I could be doing so many other things.
Working, making money.
Exactly. And it's like, no, there are sick days for such a thing, right? And a lot of companies do offer that benefit. And it is your right and entitlement to use sick days if that's what your company offers. If you do not have sick days and you need the money, then that's a different conversation, but you can make up hours later on, right? There's other ways to, find to make the money back, right? If that's the concern, there's maybe down the road, you know, even getting a part-time job or doing a different extra work or whatever for your job. But in getting away from that thought of I need the money. Yes, you need the money to survive. We all do. However, it cannot be at the detriment of your physical health and overall well-being, because, you know, if you get worse, which is usually what happens when you don't nurture or take care of yourself when you have a cold or a flu. I'm a big proponent of vitamin C. I take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C very often to help me feel like I'm doing something for it. That's part of my own self-care, is ensuring that I take that vitamin. Psychological self-care, taking time off work from school and other obligations. So this is something I did actually on Tuesday. However, I did replace it with something else, but I felt very happy and relaxed afterwards, because it had been a stressor for me. We're in the process of moving, so packing and moving is very stressful. But getting away from, like, taking time off of my school work on that day, and I did do something else with it. But again, I felt really good about that, right? It's when I start to feel guilty about these things that there's something that I need to work through in terms of my thoughts or feelings. Another psychological one, find reasons to laugh. Right, laughter is a big one for healing and recovery as well, and not laughing at yourself, but as long as you're doing it from a place of self-love and that. Talking about our problems to other people is listed on there. Participate in hobbies. So you're talking about rituals, Sabra, hobbies, scrapbooking or painting, running, whatever it is for you that's healthy for you. How often do you do it? Social self-care is something that, I know for myself, this was on my self-care plan to be more social. And I'm glad that one of my longtime friends actually reached out to me a couple weeks back and said, okay, we're setting a date to go out for dinner because I haven't seen you in 6 months. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm doing that anxiety thing where I'm like, yeah, no, it's okay. I'm busy. Everything's, you know, I've got lots of things to do. And then at the end of this 3-hour dinner was great. I thank my friend for doing that, because it really pushed me into, and I use the word push here in a good way, like it really helped foster my capacity to engage in that kind of social self-care for myself that I hadn't done in a long time. So keep in touch with old friends, overall social self-care, meeting new people, those kinds of things. Spiritual self-care. So spend time in nature. Sabra, this is yours. Meditate, pray, recognize the things that give meaning in your life. So what is meaningful to you is a huge impact. And I know
separate.
Yep, for sure.
One bit to that spiritual, it's silence as a tool. And silence can be extremely challenging, especially in the time and age that we are in. It's very hard for many of us to tune off, to shut off. But we need to shut off, because it is through that silence that we actually hear ourselves.
Mm.
I know it's kind of paradoxical, but in silence lies a voice.
That's really deep right now.
It's very
really
deep,
good.
You know, and silence is so, and it's so, so important, because we started off by saying about consciousness and that creative awareness. I love your term, Stuart.
Mm.
It was because of moments of silence,
mm.
moments of that pause, that you got in touch with that sacred experience,
mm-hmm.
or that sacred message, and you heard it. Without that silence, without reflection, we can't move forward.
Can't move forward.
So I want to add to that spiritual, is that silence is another form.
That's on my bucket list, one of those mm-hmm. silent retreats. Every time I hear somebody from the house say, I'm going on a silent retreat for a week, I'm like, how? How do you do that? I'm scared. One day of silence. I don't know. I can do maybe 5-10 minutes of silence. I can do that. But a week or a full day, I'm not sure yet. That's on my list. Professional self-care. So this is another one. Improving my professional skills. So is public speaking, like you said, it was a fear or anxiety causing for you to immerse yourself in public speaking opportunities, right? There are courses out there that people can take. Granted, some of them do cost money, but there's other ways to enhance your public speaking skills for free, right?
Absolutely.
Here's one that's really simple. Maybe people might not think about it, but you know, you gather your best of friends mm-hmm. and you present to them, and then they can give you feedback on how you did. Doesn't cost much. You can even make it a public speaking party where everybody gets turns at doing a public speaking. You can have a topic and do that in front of your friends and practice, and or family or whoever you trust.
And you can start off with it as being a charade.
Yes, exactly. And make
so
make
it's non-threatening.
Light of it. Yep.
Make light of it. People are having fun. And before you know it, you begin to let down the guard. You begin to reduce the anxiety.
I think even like an example, like what we're doing right here, right now, mm-hmm. granted, this is international. It's not like it's local radio, but this is what gave me a lot of confidence. I had already done a lot of public speaking already prior to doing this, but this is a whole different game.
Mm-hmm.
A whole different game.
One thing about this self-care assessment tool that Maria has just shared with us, when I reflected on it, what I found that these five areas, the physical, the psychological, emotional being one, the third one being social, then the spiritual, and the fifth one being professional. By doing this assessment from time to time, one does not have to do this weekly.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a period of time to do it, to give you a sense of what is your journey, how far you've come and how far you want to get to. This also would help, I don't know, but some of you may have annual work reviews,
mm-hmm.
professional reviews.
Once a year.
This can really help you come up with a very informed way of dealing with that review, and particularly setting goals. Because many workplaces, they talk about work-life balance, and they talk about wanting to promote that in their employees. So this here, this tool, these five areas can really help you inform yourself to then deal with it with your supervisor.
For sure, and it's another way to bring awareness to
yeah.
those things.
You know, and again, I can't emphasize on this enough. I mean, we, as survivors, we are really hard on ourselves as it is. So please, when doing this sort of exercise, again, please pay diligence to patience for yourself. Mm-hmm. Realize that if you do fail on one thing, there's still lots of time to go on and try not to push yourself too hard, or try not to be too hard on yourself, is what I'm trying to say. And it is doable, but over a period of time, and one step at a time. And Safford, to what you're saying about self-evaluation, totally a great idea. But again, it's something you don't want to do by the week or even by the month. Leave it for 3 months or 4 months.
Exactly.
Unless you see you're doing something totally crazy, amazing, which you've never recognized before, and you need to go back and look and say, oh, my God, look what I'm doing, right?
Absolutely, because all of this requires compassion, forgiveness, and understanding. So if we don't have self-compassion, we can actually negate the benefits of all that we talked about, the grounding, the meditation, the yoga. So you have to be kind to yourself. But what I would like to, if I may just pull it together for me in terms of on this note, is that I think today's message to all of us is, you know, whether we're working through our triggers, we're moving towards and trying to be more grounded. One of the conditions is, I want to remind us, I'm repeating here, but that self-compassion, patience, that will help us foster what we call is a change and mindset. Because those are the requirements that we need in order to heal. Because it is through those that growth mindset can we affect these changes.
Very important you point that out. Thank you. Any more we can add to this?
Yeah, for sure. The self-care plan, like how to create or evaluate even what you're doing now, right? And again, being self-compassionate, not to be highly critical too much of yourself. List all the ways that you do self-care now. And how are these working for you? Are they still beneficial for you and helping you to ground yourself and helping you to feel better? Can they be improved? And how? How can they be improved?
So tweak it.
Yeah, so if you're in nature and it's already working for you, maybe be in nature a little bit longer might help you feel even more calm and grounded if you have the time. If the anxious thoughts of, I have so many things to do, but how could I spend another 10 minutes in nature? I got to go do my laundry. Your laundry will get done. 10 minutes in nature might help you feel more grounded. Mm-hmm. And you might learn or meet somebody along the way and you have a great conversation that wouldn't have happened if you had gone home earlier to do all that laundry or do all the cleaning or whatever it is that you're being anxious about in the first place. What are some other self-care measures that you can do to ground yourself that you're not already doing, but that you're possibly willing to consider? Because you can make an extensive list and say, I'm going to do all these things, but it's not realistic and you never get to do them. And then you feel ashamed because you never tried to begin with. And then you're a failure. All back to that catastrophization that can happen real quick. That down spiral is super easy to do. The hard work is the up spiral where you're like, okay, I may not have 20 minutes to do meditation, but I do have 30 seconds to focus on my breathing today. You have 30 seconds of your day to focus on your breathing. I guarantee it that you can do that. You can do that even, you know, in the bathroom or when you're putting on your shoes or when you're, you know, pouring your coffee. And I love those videos of you pouring coffee, right? You can mindfully pour your coffee and watch it as it goes into your cup and it's filling and you're grateful for that cup of coffee because it's going to bring you into that space of being alert and awake and ready to go and face traffic. Right?
Oh, that's zen.
There you go. So be mindful. And that's what that is paying attention to what's going on, right, in your surroundings and being grateful for that cup of coffee, being grateful for the stove that warms up the water if you still have a, you know,
sure,
old-fashioned kettle or whatever, or the campfire or the wood, whatever. Being grateful for everything that, you know, every little thing that you
and
have.
And I'm going to tie that sense of gratefulness to what we spoke about earlier, that when one becomes more grounded and in touch with self, that one becomes in touch with others. So gratitude is about being graciously accepting, acknowledging that which one has as enjoyments, privileges, and at the same time being mindful of those that also participated. So for example, coffee. Where did this coffee come from?
Colombia.
who grew it? How did they grow it, right? So when we exercise in gratitude, we become aware, I have this beautiful mug full of coffee. Who made this mug? Where was it made and by whom? What was it like for them making it? That's what we call mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And that's what we call about being connected. That's what is called living consciously.
Mm-hmm. So the idea here is, do not create expectations you cannot fulfill for yourself.
That's right.
That's kind of what's being said right here, right now. And that's a really hard thing for some people to catch on to. But from experience, personal experience, I certainly learned that not to make my pile higher than I can climb. Pardon the metaphor, but that's really what it was. Or trying to climb stairs that you'll never reach to the top of. It continues. And maybe you'll go so far and you'll fall backwards.
I had surgery 2 years ago, and I had to learn to walk again.
It's massive.
And it started by one step at a time.
Literally.
If I started off by saying I wanted to run, I had to learn how to walk first before I could run. Mm. And before I could walk, I had to actually learn how to take a step.
Mm.
And that's what I think you are reminding us of, Stuart.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just one step at a time, slow and easy.
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that I learned from my healing journey. And I hear this from all the other people that have gone through the same experiences. In the true process of themselves, as we pointed out, it's not linear. It's you just take your time, one step at a time, and you got to feel your way through to what your capacity is, to how far you can go and how quickly you can grab it. Not everybody's going to grab it as quick as the next person.
And for the perfectionists out there,
yes,
you do not have to be perfect.
Yes.
I started off by saying that.
But yes,
right?
You did.
Remember?
I thought of myself. You do not have to be
you
perfect.
You don't have to be perfect. That's not the aim here. We are not meant to be perfect. We are meant to be whole. And this is what I think a gatehouse is offering.
Mm-hmm.
So any closing thoughts before we end the evening?
When you set goals, set realistic ones that you can achieve within like a timely manner without putting that pile of extra, overwhelm on yourself of the list, right? So if you're doing a self-care plan and you're looking at, top three things that you do for self-care right now, and if they're working for you, great, stick to them, keep doing them. And if you're willing to try something new that adds to your self-care, great. Again, be realistic about it. Don't be putting things on your list that are going to bring you more anxiety that you're not ready for to address. And then ask for help and seek support.
Mm-hmm. Very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Seeking help and seeking support. And whatever and wherever one starts with whatever step, let it be meaningful and let it be filled with self-compassion.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you both. Actually, one more thing. I guess for this the website that we were talking about.
Yes.
Therapist aid worksheet. And that's at www.therapistaid.com, right?
Yes.
And worksheets.
Yep.
Self-care assessment PDF.
Yep.
And you go on there and you can go through the list just as we've gone through here this evening. And it'll help you, I'm sure, to some degree. And there might even be some other things out there, but this is one that seems to be very, very straightforward, not complicated. And, you could add more thinking to it, but it's very straightforward and easy to follow. And it's also done nicely so you're not hard on yourself.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Very caring.
You know, very, 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 very caring. And that's great. I'm so happy that he's come here tonight. And self-care is always really, really a big thing. And I often, not only we talk about it so much here at the Gatehouse, but even to the social media platform that I follow, I see it all the time. And I see people struggling and with different things that they're trying to help themselves and they're trying to get out of this little hole that they're in. And, learning self-care is a really, really hard thing to learn for themselves, especially when you've wallowed in your own self, crap for all your life. And it's just not that easy to crawl out sometimes. But when you do find it, and it is possible because I'm a great example of that myself. So I know it is possible and you can get out of that hole. Okay, well, I guess I'm going to announce this one more time. so reminding you folks out there that on May 31st, we are having our 9th annual Transforming Trauma Conference. I won't get into the guests right now, but I would encourage you to go to our Gatehouse website, thegatehouse.org, and you'll find a list of our guests, special guests that will be speaking at our conference. And also, if you'd like to come, you can also register online. And if you'd like to speak with a real person, as I mentioned before, you can call the Gatehouse at 416-255-5900 and speak with any one of our volunteers or staff, and we'll be more than happy to help you. Yeah, and one more little thing, too. April 27th, we are having another partners program, and I believe we still have some seats available for that.
Yep.
So, again, if you'd like to partake in that, you can go to the Gatehouse website or thegatehouse.org, or you can call the Gatehouse at 416-255-5900, and our staff will be happy to help you. Ladies, you're amazing.
Thank you, Stuart.
You're
too.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, everybody.
And
who's
thank
listening.
You, listeners.
Yeah, thank you, listeners, especially and also the Twitter feed. There's a bunch of people that were following us. And thank you. I did not answer to many things. Not that anybody asked any questions, but people have made comments in regards to what they did for self care. And hopefully, with what we talked about, we'll maybe help you on that in making some decision to what you might want to try for yourself to bring better self care for yourself. And bringing that to an end and a close, well, what we talked about, make sure that if you are a little bit triggered or something, take some time out for yourself and do apply some self-care to yourself. Not only tonight, but we're approaching the weekend now too as well.
I'm packing.
You're packing.
That's
now.
Stressful.
Yeah, you're moving.
Yeah, goodbye, trigger pool.
Folks, I bid you farewell. Most importantly, self-care towards yourselves. Thank you, Sabra and Maria, for joining me here tonight.
Thank you.
Talking about self-care, and we'll do this again on some other topic, I hope, in the future. And have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Good night.